Greetings and salutations, everyone, to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animize Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, may I say, welcome all of you, and let me explain to you a little bit how this goes. Now, you see, this is a podcast, right? Because you can't see me, you can only hear me, and it's about animation. So basically, it's a podcast about animation, believe it or not, it's crazy. But specifically, I discuss about the latest news that happened this week. So, first things first, I will go and discuss about the live-action remake of Disney's The Little Mermaid, and the fact that they brought in Lin-Manuel Miranda and Alan Menken to work on the songs. Then we will be looking into the trailer, the first ever look and the first ever trailer for Surf's Up 2. Then afterwards, we will look into the announcement of Batman, Return of the Caped Crusader. Then afterwards, we will be looking into who will be writing for Detective Pikachu. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week, and I'm sure this is something that all of you are really anticipating for. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, first things first, we all know about the big trend that Disney is doing with the live-action reboots. This is something that is a massive cash grabber, and this year, this is the one that, like, Disney really went full force with it. They released three live-action reboots, one of which is a sequel, and the other two are based on their previous films. First off, we got The Jungle Book, which is so far the best of the Disney live-action reboots. It's actually really, really fantastic. Amazing cast, amazing visual effects, just like everything about it is really good, and it's almost on par with the original 1967 film. And then afterwards, you got Alice Through the Looking Glass, probably the worst of them all, if you do technically count Alice in Wonderland into all this mix. It was a really, really stupid film, really, really stupidly written. It's just, everything about it is just such a dumb film, and it makes no sense whatsoever. And then recently, you got Pete's Dragon, which has absolutely nothing to do with Pete's Dragon. I recently saw it. It was okay at best. At the worst, it's forgettable. So, really, it's just harmless, but meh, people are just gonna forget it really quick. But anyways, as you guys also know, there are plenty coming out. Like, Disney is pretty much planning an entire list of these live-action reboots, including coming soon. The next one that's going to be coming up, of course, is going to be the Beauty and the Beast live-action reboot with Emma Watson. But no surprise here, they also want to go and plan out a live-action reboot of The Little Mermaid. At this point, it is unavoidable, considering that The Little Mermaid is one of the most iconic Disney films that they have done. It's the one that pretty much started off the Disney Renaissance, and what would follow afterwards is a long string of some of the best films that they've done, including Rescuers Down Under, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and Lion King, and pretty much so on and so forth. But so far with this Little Mermaid reboot, nothing is really announced. There's nothing really official about it. We don't know, like, what's really going on. It's, like, really early in development. But so far, they have announced who is going to be writing the songs. And so far, they Disney pretty much unleashed two of their biggest powerhouses, one of which being Alan Menken, and the other being Lin-Manuel Miranda. Now, I don't need to make an introduction for Alan Menken. Chances are, if you are listening to this, then you know very well who Alan Menken is. In fact, it's actually very interesting that they brought in Alan Menken, considering that he did work on the original songs for The Little Mermaid in the 1989 film with Howard Ashman. And plus the fact that Alan Menken is one of the biggest people responsible for the Disney Renaissance and the music afterwards. Like, he's the one who written the most songs for it, including not just with The Little Mermaid, but also Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Tangled, Enchanted, and so much more. And even just recently, He actually wrote a song for Sausage Party, The Great Beyond, which, you know, it's actually a great, well-written song, definitely fantastic, and definitely hilarious. So definitely, it's great to see that Alan Menken is coming back into The Little Mermaid after, like, oh god, almost 30 years now. That's actually insane to think about. But then, we also got Lin-Manuel Miranda. For those of you that don't know, Lin-Manuel Miranda is so far, like, the hottest thing in terms of musicals. Like, he just stepped out of Hamilton, which currently is one of the biggest Broadway shows in recent years. And now he's currently pretty much working with Disney on many projects. Like, Disney saw the potential that Lin-Manuel has, and they decided they need to, like, grab him as soon as possible, make him a part of the Disney family, and make him responsible for many of, like, what could be, the upcoming legacy that Disney will unfold. Like, currently, he did write the songs that we will soon hear in Moana. Not all of them, but he did write some of the songs. He is also going to play Jack, which is pretty much a spin-off of Bert for the sequel of Mary Poppins in Mary Poppins Returns. And I guess now he is going to be working on the Little Mermaid reboot. Now, what does make this really special is that not only Lin-Manuel Miranda will be writing the songs, but also he will be one of the producers. And plus the fact that it has been noted here on my source here on Deadline that apparently The Little Mermaid is a very personal film for Lin-Manuel, so much so that apparently his new son is actually named Sebastian after one of the characters in the film. So definitely this is going to be someone who seriously does care about The Little Mermaid, and he wants, and he'll go out and do it right. So, with all that said, that's pretty much the whole news with what's going on here. And, I'm gonna be very honest, like, with the idea of a Little Mermaid live-action reboot, at least, yes, I know that there are gonna be some people mentioning that technically it's not gonna be the only one, because, of course, Universal is going to make their, live-action version of the Little Mermaid, which is going to stick a lot closer to the original Hans Christian Andersen tale. But we got the Disney, but, like, I'm pretty sure, like, this one is going to be the more well-known one because nowadays people associate The Little Mermaid more with the Disney movie. But I will be keeping an eye on this because I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure how the outcome is going to be. But I will say that I am happy that they are taking a good first step, bringing in Alan Menken and Lin-Manuel Miranda to go out and do some of the songs. It's actually pretty good. And also, one more extra thing I would like to add is that apparently they're going to be responsible not only bringing in the original, some of the original music from the animated film, but also adding in some new ones. So, pretty much, if there's anybody who knows about The Little Mermaid and its music, it's hands down going to be Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is pretty much a huge fan of the movie, and Alan Menken, one of the people responsible for the film. Now, I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty confident at this point that the music will so far be in good hands. But how is the movie going to be in itself? That I'm not 100% sure. And I got a feeling that the one that will determine how this movie is going to be is the upcoming live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, because that movie right there is going to follow a bit of the same footsteps as we have right here with The Little Mermaid, because that one is also going to be a musical that will use some of the songs from the original animated feature, and plus the fact that they did bring in Alan Menken to, you know, to be in charge of the music and the songs. So he's pretty much going to be in charge to keep an eye on that department. And honestly, like, that's going to be a big factor to see that, okay, yeah, they brought in the right person for the music, but is it going to be enough to make a good film? That we don't know. So like the only thing that we have seen so far in terms of Beauty and the Beast is just the teaser trailer where Ewan McGregor playing not Lumiere is out there going, "What if she is the one?" but yeah, like honestly, we'll just have to wait and see. Like honestly, I am 100% guaranteed that the live action reboot will no way possible try to outshine the animated feature, because like I mean when we're talking like when talking about Beauty and the Beast, we're talking about like an animated masterpiece here, so I don't think the live action reboot will ever outshine that. So but if it's going to be good or not, that we'll have to wait and see, and that will play a big factor if this Little Mermaid movie will be enjoyable. But again, we do have Lin-Manuel Miranda also being in charge of the producer, so maybe he will go out and try to give justice to this film. But on the other hand, there is one thing that I am a little bit concerned, is that with what Lin-Manuel Miranda has to do in the film, he has some pretty big shoes to fill, because for the live-action reboot, he has to be in Howard Ashman's place. And with Howard Ashman, he's one of the, like, Howard Ashman is one of the people responsible for making the songs from The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast just absolutely timeless. I mean, like, if you look at the songs in there, they're just, like, some of the best that Disney has to offer. I'm not saying that it's all because of Howard Ashman. Of course, Alan Menken has a hand in this, but it's mostly the combining duo of Howard Ashman and Alan Menken that makes this beautiful combination right there. And not to mention also, like, some of the songs in Aladdin. This is why, those movies have much more popular and well-known songs than the movies that would follow afterwards, like Pocahontas or Hunchback of Notre Dame, even though Hunchback has an amazing soundtrack, or like Mulan or Hercules or any of those films. That's why we remember a lot more those films, is because like Howard Ashman and Alan Menken have such amazing chemistry. But even though that we do have one piece of that chemistry, could Lin-Manuel Miranda fill in like what Howard Ashman did? And I know like a lot of people could say yes, because like we're talking about the same guy who did the music for Hamilton. But honestly, we'll have to wait and see. But you know, maybe like he, or on the other hand, maybe like he wouldn't fit Howard Ashman's shoes, but like he can bring in his own spin. Like what would make Lin-Manuel Miranda Lin-Manuel Miranda? Maybe that could actually help. And honestly, in that regards, that could probably be a new welcome. Like I wouldn't actually mind, honestly. So, yeah. So overall, I would say that with this decision for The Little Mermaid, in terms of its music, I pretty much now have good confidence on both Alan Menken and Lin-Manuel Miranda to do a pretty good job on that department. But rather, if it's going to make a good movie in general, that we'll just have to wait and see. But again, it's pretty much in the early stages, and chances are the live-action reboot of The Little Mermaid, with how things are scheduled with all their other films, we'll probably have to wait until maybe after 2020. Okay, so for our next story right here, oh god, this was something that I wanted to wipe off from my memory, but no. Apparently this thing actually does exist, and we need a freaking reminder about it. Yes, what I have over here is reason number 2,953 to why Sony Pictures Animation might as well freaking shut down their entire just shut off the entire company right there, is because now we got the trailer for Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania. Now, for those of you who don't know, Sony Pictures Animation a little while ago have announced that they will be making a sequel to Surf's Up, the only animated film that they have made that actually got a nomination for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. And with that said, but they're not just going to be doing a sequel to Surf's Up. That's not going to be it. They decided to add a little twist to it, and they're bringing in WWE Studios to work with Sony and include some of their big name wrestlers. So it's not just going to be the story of Cody Maverick once again surfing the waves. They're also going to be bringing in John Cena, The Undertaker. John Cena, who's going to be playing a penguin named JC. They got The Undertaker. They also got Paige. They got Triple H going to be playing a character named Hunter. And then finally, Vince McMahon. Maybe his name is pronounced Vince McMahon, or I don't know. I don't watch wrestling, but yeah, basically, now they got freaking Surf's Up with freaking wrestlers. And with the teaser trailer that we saw, it doesn't really say much about it. It doesn't really reveal a lot of what's going on. Basically, what it's telling us is that they're bringing back Cody Maverick, Chicken Joe, and Lonnie. Those three characters are going to be coming back, and they want to go and surf with the WWE wrestlers, and they're just going to be hanging out with them. And my God, just looking at the trailer, oh God, they're pretty much bringing Surf's Up in the same quality as their recent films, basically. Even though this is just going to be direct-to-DVD, I don't really see the point in this. It's just like, I feel like just watching this, I don't know if this is 100% true, but I got a feeling that with what they're making here, they're not going to make a sequel to Surf's Up. I got a feeling that with what they're doing, they're pretty much getting rid of the entire documentary feel to it, because that's possibly the best thing about Surf's Up, is the way that they execute it. Now, I understand that conceptually, on paper, the movie does sound like the movie does suck. It sounds bland, it sounds stupid, it sounds like they put no effort into it, you know, pretty much like all the other Sony Pictures animation films. But in terms of the execution, making it a documentary style, that's what really made this movie great. That's what made this movie so believable. That's what it made it feel like you see a true story developing. That's what actually made these characters really believable. But in here, it looks like they decided to completely take that away. And when you take off that documentary style onto something like Surf's Up, what do you get? You get basically this very bland animated feature, which the only selling point about it is surfing penguins. And even at that, like, it doesn't look like they're going to bring back any other characters other than, like, Chicken Joe, Cody, and Lonnie. Like, so far, I didn't see any of the other characters, like James Woods' character, like the beaver manager. There are some that I've kind of forgot their names, but also like the egotistical villain, the one who looks like he has the same amount of muscles as, like, who looks like a bit like John Cena's character. Then you also like, and also Big Z. They're not gonna bring out Big Z. And you know the worst thing about it is that you can definitely hear that they absolutely did not bring back any of the original, they did not bring any of the original actors. They did not bring in Shia LaBeouf, and they didn't even bring in John Heder to play either Cody or Chicken Joe. Now, say what you will about Shia LaBeouf nowadays, like, he could be a crazy actor or whatever, but honestly, his performance in Surf's Up as Cody Maverick, that was actually fantastic. He actually did a really good job on it. And also John Heder. I actually am a fan of John Heder, and I've seen many of his performances, and, you know, he's actually pretty legit as an actor, and I'm surprised that he's not getting as much jobs as he is right now. Like, you know, Napoleon Dynamite, I mean, it is a classic, and I remember watching Walt Before Mickey, and say what you will about the movie, yeah, it's inaccurate as hell, but my God, he actually really does play a great Roy Disney. He actually does, like, he is a very convincing brother to Walt Disney, and honestly, if he was given, like, a greater script to work on a Walt Disney biography, like, I would love to see him return as Roy. He does such a fantastic job at it. But honestly, And like even with as Chicken Joe, he actually does play a pretty good comedic sidekick, and I really do like the character. But in here, like, you can definitely tell that this is not them. Like, the voice actors didn't even try to sound like either Shia LaBeouf or Chicken Joe. Like, they think that just doing, like, just that surfer dude accent, you know, just the lower baritone voice, and it'll sound like Chicken Joe, man. Like, no! No, it does not. And it's such a freaking stupid novelty. And, you know, honestly, why do we need a... Like, honestly, it just goes back to the same question. Why do we freaking need a Surf's Up 2 to begin with? This is just another example of how Sony, especially Sony Pictures Animation, is so freaking desperate to bring out a franchise. Nobody asked for... Like, they made movies in which none of them deserve a sequel. Nobody asked for a sequel. Did we ask for... Did we ask for a Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2? Hell no! Did anybody ask for a Hotel Transylvania 2? I don't think so. Did anybody ask for a Smurfs 2? Well, maybe because you just think that people will throw money at you, but clearly no. Did anybody ask for not one, not two, but three sequels to frickin' Open Season? Absolutely not! And, you know, the thing is, honestly, I really do like Surf's Up. I honestly believe not only is it the best film made by Sony Pictures Animation, hands down, but also a very underrated film, honestly. Like, this should be the movie that Sony should be prominently displaying instead of showing movies, like, made by idiots, basically. But, like, I didn't look at it and think, I need another one. And especially, I did not think, like, Not only do I need another one, I need one with frickin' WWE wrestlers. And so far, from what I've heard, like, I know absolutely no one. I know no, like, there is nobody that I know of. And, like, and many of my friends are actually wrestling fans. None of them are interested in watching something as dumb as, like, a Surf's Up movie with wrestlers. And, like, the most that I've heard is apparently there are some that are, like, so bad it's good, I believe. WWE has teamed up with other animated projects before. Like, there's the Flintstones with wrestling. Of course, there's also Scooby-Doo with wrestling. And I think recently they just released a sequel for it. So, do we really need, like, this? No, absolutely not. And from the looks of it, it looks like it's gonna be a dumb frickin' movie. And I don't know anybody who's actually excited for frickin' Surf's Up 2, but overall, yeah, like, for God's sake, Sony, just frickin' give up. But if you are somehow clinically stupid enough to actually want to go and watch Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania, then you'll probably have to wait when it's going to be released on Blu-ray and DVD in the spring of 2017. My God, Sony, what the fridge were you thinking? Now, for our next story right here, this is going to be regarding the DC animated films that they usually come out straight to DVD. Now, I know that for everyone, the last movie kind of left you out with a bit of a bad taste. Now, I understand that The Killing Joke, it definitely is subpar, and it absolutely did not meet everybody's expectations, especially with the first 30 minutes being an absolute waste of time. I understand that completely. But they might actually do something that could make themselves a bit redeemable. No, you never know, but we'll see that maybe, we'll see if, this will bring you back into the DC animated world. And what they're going to do is a brand new movie that they have announced on Entertainment Weekly with Batman: Return of the Caped Crusader. Now, with this one, instead of going with many of the popular comics that they got out, like The Killing Joke or Year One or The Dark Knight Returns, what they decided to do with this one, they are doing an entire animated feature completely devoted to the 1960s Batman animated series. And from what we know so far is apparently they are actually bringing back some of the actors from the 1960s movie. Some of these will the 1960s series, I mean. These will include, of course, Adam West as Batman, Burt Ward as Robin, and they got Julie Newmar playing as Catwoman. And reading a little bit from an from my source here on Entertainment Weekly, saying in the exclusive trailer, which you can see above, well, not here because you're listening to a podcast, Batman and Robin are seemingly on their way to a fiery death with the news that a new Batman animated series is on the way. Sparks a brilliant escape plan. West Batman also teases the film's villains, including the Joker, Riddler, Penguin, and Catwoman, pretty much reminiscent to the Batman movie back in the 60s when they actually had those four villains teaming up together. And of course, among those actors, we know that Julie Newmar will be returning as Catwoman. And so far, that's the only thing that we know about it. And honestly, looking at the trailer, you know, it's actually interesting that the designs, like, they do try to stay true to the Batman animated series. I don't know why I keep saying Batman animated series. That's, like, a completely different thing. But the Batman series of the 60s, like, they're keeping more in the looks of that. Like, they're not going to make it, like, cartoony or anything. Like, they're going to make the characters look pretty much exactly like that, but a bit more simplified with a bit of that, how can I describe it? A bit... I wouldn't say with the Bruce Timm design. It's just like pretty much like a sketched version. A bit, actually, you know, the best way to actually describe it would be like, okay, with the Batman animated, the Batman series of the 60s, my God, yeah, this is going to be a drinking game at this point. Every time that Matt mistakes the Batman 60s series with the Batman animated series, take a drink. With the Batman series of the 60s, what they want to do with the design is actually very reminiscent to the intro of the show. They want to go in that direction, but it also has the same type of coloring, the same type of shading that you would normally get with other direct-to-DVD animated features coming from DC. And honestly, you know, like, the beauty of this movie is that, you know, I actually have a lot more confidence that they can actually do something right with this, more so than they would with The Killing Joke, because with something like The Killing Joke, you have to be very faithful to it, so it actually limits with what you can do. But with this, pretty much, there's very little room to make mistakes. Basically, you could be as goofy and over the top as you can, and especially, like, with the trailer that you see, Batman and Robin are pretty much tied up on this giant TV dinner tray, and they were about to enter in an oven. Like, that's basically the tone that you get, but it's the exact same tone that you would have in the 60s series, you know? Pretty much, there's little room to leave errors, and, like, plus the fact that you got Robin saying, like, the, like, holy nostalgia Batman, holy tuna, holy egg fish, you know, stuff like that, so... There, you know, like, with the creativity that you can have, you're a lot more free to do what you want, and especially... This is the kind of Batman that you're allowed to be as goofy as, however you wish to be, you know? This is not like the Batman live-action movies where you always have to make him so, you know, so brooding, so serious, and so gritty, and all that kind of stuff. Rather it be with the Christian Bale Batman or the new Ben Affleck Batman. With this one, you're allowed to be goofy. This is the only Batman, along with the Lego Batman in the Lego movie franchise, that you're allowed to be goofy. You're allowed to poke fun at the elements of Batman. You're allowed to have fun with it, to just wing it, to go and be crazy. So honestly, this has a very good chance to actually be a good Batman animated movie that will stay faithful to what it's based on, and they don't have to add anything stupid or anything extra to it. You know, you don't have to add like some useless sex scene with Batgirl, you know? Like, you could still put it like it's actually okay to have some romance now, because there are a few moments in which Catwoman actually has a bit of romantic tension with Batman in the 60s series. So at least that you're allowed to do so. But yeah, like honestly, this could actually have some great potential, especially that they are allowed to do whatever kind of goofy thing they want to do with Batman. The fact that they bring in some of the original cast, including Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Newmar, and that they're going to have some classic villains, including Joker, Riddler, Penguin, and Catwoman. Like, I'm sure this is going to be a DC animated movie that's going to be a lot of fun. And if you guys are excited for the movie to be released, just keep in mind that the movie will be out on October 11th digitally, and it will be out on Blu-ray on November 1st, most likely to tie in with the 50th anniversary of the Batman series of the 60s. Okay, now for our next story, just like the first story that we have, we actually have right here another live-action movie, but it does have some good tie-ins with animation, considering that we are talking about the brand new Pokemon pick, Detective Pikachu. Now, if you guys don't know, like, it has been long in talks that Legendary Pictures really wanted to get their hands on this Pokemon movie, and finally that, and now that they do have it, they decided to go and make the movie be based on one of the more recent games released in Japan exclusively for now, which is Detective Pikachu. And, like, you might have heard, like, there was a little bit of a trend that there was a petition going on that when Detective Pikachu comes into North America, they really wanted to go and get Danny DeVito to be Pikachu, but it didn't really happen. Like, Danny DeVito saw it and he was like, "What the hell's a Pokemon? I'm not even gonna try to be the Pikachu. Unless you pay me a good amount of money, I'm not gonna be the Pikachu. I don't know why people are asking me that." With that said and done, they actually hired two writers that are going to be in charge of writing the script for this Detective Pikachu movie. And so far, it really brought a lot of enthusiasm to a lot of people. So far, they actually hired Nicole Perlman and Alex Hirsch to be writing Detective Pikachu. Now, to give you guys a little bit of a context about who some of these people are, I'm sure a lot of you know exactly who they are, but just to give a bit of context, first we got Perlman, who is so far one of the top writers at Marvel, especially how she actually went and she wrote the scripts for Thor, and she actually wrote for Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, even though I'm not that big of a fan of comic book movies, even, like, I'm not saying that I hate them, but I just don't really follow the trend as much. Like, I've actually seen both Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy, and they are fantastic movies, I gotta say. And plus the fact, not only did she actually wrote those films, but now she is actually currently working on the third Sherlock Holmes movie. She's also writing the upcoming Captain Marvel, and also she has previously wrote Inside Out with Meg LaFauve down at Pixar. So definitely, she has some great credentials right there. And as for Alex Hirsch, I don't really need to really introduce this guy, because chances are, if you are listening to this, then you know very well who Alex Hirsch is. Alex Hirsch is pretty much the creator of Disney's Gravity Falls, one of the big hit series that just came out. Unfortunately, it had to end, but at least it ended the way that Alex Hirsch wanted. So with that said and done, like, he definitely made one of the most beloved animated series of this decade, right next to shows like Adventure Time and Steven Universe. And on top of that, I remember checking some of his some of his posts on Twitter, and he did mention that he is a huge Pokemon fan. So definitely he will, like, try his best to give this project some respect. And honestly, just by watching it, even though we don't really know much about what's going to be going on with Detective Pikachu, or what direction they're going to be going, or the fact that we didn't really see any images or trailers or whatever of how this movie is going to go, kind of like with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Alan Menken working on the live action Little Mermaid movie, but just for the music, just with Nicole Perlman and Alex Hirsch, I definitely have full confidence that chances are we're gonna get a great movie with this. Now, I was a bit skeptical that they are gonna start out with a Detective Pikachu movie, but now that they got them on board to work on this, you know, I'm honestly really excited for it. I think this is going to be a great idea bringing those two. Like, with the previous works that they've done, I'm sure that they'll go out and make something that is relatable. You know, it could have some heart. I'm sure they'll definitely deliver in the humor, but also, maybe they'll also bring out some good creativity with what they can do with the world of Pokemon, because I think that's going to be one of the big things that people are really excited about. Now, it doesn't matter what story you can bring in, rather it be like Detective Pikachu, or like if you're going to have a story based more on the anime with Ash and friends, but I think the one thing that people are really going to be excited about this is that they're going to make, you know, they're adapting the world of Pokemon onto the big screen, so we're not just going to see Pikachu, but also we're going to see plenty of other Pokemon jumping out to the big screen, how they're going to look in live action. That is going to be the big selling point, is how they're going to integrate that. But then again, that's just like, that's mostly going to be Legendary's job instead of Nicole and Alex's job. Like, their focus is mostly going to be on this case-solving Pikachu. Maybe they'll bring in some other Pokemons as well, but who knows? We'll just have to wait and see for it. But so far, I just got to say that I definitely have full confidence in these two, that they're going to go out and they're going to bring in a great script with Detective Pikachu. And I know that this is going to be a movie that I'm going to be definitely excited to go see. And, you know, like, to really bring in the world of Pokemon to life. And, you know, like, even though a part of me is scared about it, but I am interested to see what would a live-action Pikachu look like. Like, are they going to stick very closely to the designs of Pikachu, or are they going to make something that seems more realistic to their animal counterparts? I don't know, but yeah, like, so far, I gotta say, the script, I'm pretty sure it's in good hands, and, like with the Little Mermaid movie, so far things are only announced, and are we going to see it soon, or no? Okay, yeah, honestly, I don't know when it's going to happen, but chances are, we might actually see Detective Pikachu somewhere in, 2020 or afterwards. Okay, everybody, this is it. We finally end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week, and this is something that I am absolutely sure that a lot of you want to hear me talk about. Now, this was pretty much one of the biggest things that people have been discussing, and of course, this is going to be regarding Sausage Party. Now, on its opening weekend, for a small moment, people were just celebrating this movie, how it came out as such a hilarious R-rated animated comedy, and hopefully this would bring in the promise for more like R-rated comedies that, you know, they'll make more animated features that's not for kids, that they'll do it for adults, and like, we'll see a lot of things like some of the nastiness that Sausage Party would ensue, like a lot of like really gross out violence, or like just giant pile of orgies everywhere and all that kind of nasty stuff, and like no filtering on the languages, and you know, all that sort of nasty crap that makes Sausage Party beautiful. But the celebration was soon pretty much finished off, because of course, controversy erupted regarding what's actually been going on behind the scenes, and pretty much everything fell apart. And it just goes to show that rather it be with or without the Sony Pictures Animation name, Sony will always find a way to distribute movies made by animators with very poor treatment and pretty much have been abused. Now, for those of you who don't know what pretty much happened, let me tell you a little story. Now, this actually all began on Cartoon Brew, when they decided to pretty much post out an interview, you know, like pretty much your run-of-the-mill interview with the directors and stuff like that, with Conrad Vernon and Greg Tiernan, pretty much talking about how production went and the fact that Sausage Party has such a really small budget. I mean, like, they had to make it less than $20 million. So they were pretty much proud of it. But the real story is not on that Cartoon Brew article. It's actually the comments section of the Cartoon Brew article, where many animators who worked on the film that kept themselves anonymous actually revealed some dark truths regarding what happened. Just reading a few of them right here. The production costs were kept low because Greg would demand people to work overtime for free. If you wouldn't work late for free, your work would be assigned to someone who would stay late and or come in on the weekend. Some artists were even threatened with termination for not staying late to hit a deadline. The animation department signed a petition for better treatment and paid overtime. When the letter got to Annapurna, they stepped in and saw that the artists were paid and fed when overtime was needed. Over 30 animators left during the course of the production due to stress and expectations. Most of them left before the paid overtime was implemented. This was meant with animosity and was taken as a personal insult to the owners. Their name was omitted from the final credits despite working for over a year on the film. Another one stated that almost half the animation team was not credited. The team believed in this film and poured their hearts and souls into it. Despite this, more than half of it was not credited. You could see the full team on IMDb, which contains 83 people, and I am certain that there are some missing. The film's credit, however, contains 47. So that's pretty much the comments that did come out of it. And some of these even included, working with Greg and Nitrogen Productions was a nightmare for any artist. We believed in that project and stayed despite that fact. I personally know and witnessed many other incidents during the production, such as an open letter to the clients and how Greg threatened artists for it. And this pretty much went really out of hand. Pretty much it started off right there in the comments section. And what ended up happening is that other big film news sites, they actually stepped in and they pretty much discussed about it. In fact, I actually have with me not just... I was pretty much reading, most of the article that came out of Dorkly.com, but I also, got other sources as well. Like, this is the first time I'm actually using multiple sources to cover a story, not just from Dorkly, but I'm also checking from Variety that covered the same thing, and also Deadline. And what's very interesting is that in these articles, they actually revealed a lot more regarding this situation, pretty much discussing about what has been going on in the production and revealing more of the same horror stories that's been going on with the treatment that they've received from Greg Tiernan and also at Nitrogen Studios. In fact, let me actually read another one here. This is from my source here in Variety, that the animator, starting off right here, people who go in to talk to Greg Tiernan or give their notice that they, that, and, oh, wait, hold on, sorry, let me restart that. People will go in to talk to Greg or give their notice, and they'd be screaming about being blacklisted, said one animator. The animator claimed that Nitrogen had no human resource staff, so any complaints about working conditions had to be made to line producer Nicole Stein. And there's actually a real problem doing that, because the thing is with Nicole Stein, she is actually Greg Tiernan's wife. There was no one you can go to. It was uncomfortable. And basically, this is what pretty much has been happening. And as regard to Nitrogen Studios and Greg Tiernan, what they had to say about it, They actually did mention, like, they actually hit back and they did discuss about what's been going on. Greg Tiernan actually said these claims are without merit. Our production adhered to all overtime laws and regulations, as well as our contractual obligations with our artists. And he also mentioned that we take these things seriously and don't want to ignore these claims. Now, with all that said, like, people are pretty much trying to figure out, like, what has been going on, and, like, such a terrible story that's pretty much been unleashing, and rather very unfortunate that this has pretty much been going on. And, if I may say a little bit of my piece into this, that, like, even though, no, I didn't really work on the animation of Sausage Party, but, like, hearing these horror stories going on, it's actually, you know, it's sad and terrible at the same time. And it really is unfortunate how these animators ended up really get treated badly throughout this production just to go and make this movie. And, you know, the thing is that with a $20 million budget, I mean, like, I understand that you have to find ways to cut down costs, but this is absolutely ridiculous, and that's honestly really, that really is taking a step too far. I mean, like, I understand trying to work overtime to go and meet deadlines. I'm sure that does happen all the time, but trying to work overtime for free, that's really crossing the line. So not only are you taking away some of the you're taking away some of the personal time of these animators to go out and relax, to have their own lives, like, already dealing with the stress working on their regular hours working on this movie, but also the fact that they have to work, you have to make them work for free. That is honestly taking a step too far, and that should honestly be illegal. That should not be allowed whatsoever. That definitely is abuse. That's almost in the levels of slavery, even. And especially hearing about the tyranny of about Greg Tiernan and pretty much how forceful he really is. And it's actually interesting how it's not really, you know, surprisingly enough, this is not, for once, this is not Sony's fault. Like, they didn't really have much they did nothing wrong, there's nothing really wrong that they did, really. And on top of that, there's also Conan Vernon, which not many people really criticize about, but it's mostly about Greg Tiernan and the condition that they've worked on in Nitrogen Studios. In fact, there's another story mentioning how things were going fine when Nitrogen was just working on the Thomas the Tank Engine direct-to-DVD movies. Like, it was going okay. Not the best working conditions, but it was going fine. But once Greg Tiernan came in, pretty much what happened afterwards was like a total nightmare for the animators. And everywhere from what I've heard from left to right, there are many animators, anonymously, they stepped up and pretty much tried to reveal the dark stories that's been going on. And honestly, this is just terrible. Now, the thing is, as I stated before, it really is terrible that, the fact that they had to work overtime for free, like, that was pretty bad. But also, like, what does make that even worse is the fact that Greg Tiernan, like, he forced them to do it. It's like, this is something that has to be expected from them. Now, if this was an optional thing, I would be questioning more about, like, the fact that they had to do it for free. But, you know, if the animators are enthusiastic about it, if they felt like it paid off, then I guess, like, more power to them, I guess. But I would still be questioning about, like, you know, working overtime for free. But the fact that you had to be forced to work overtime for free, like, you have to do that or else you're fired, that is really where it's taking it too far. And that, like, that's where it does feel like it's terrible that you have to force their personal time away to work on this film without pay, even. that you don't pay the animators for the overtime, just for the regular hours. And that honestly is ridiculous. And like, I can imagine that this could really damage many artists and animators psychologically, because they pretty much lost all their personal time. They're pretty much exiled from the outside world just to work on weekends and to work late hours to do this job on Sausage Party, just so you can cut down cost to make the movie cheap, you know, to make the movie less than 20 million, to have almost the exact same budget as Norm of the North, basically, seriously, where Sausage Party is estimated to have a $90 million budget, Norm of the North has an $18 million budget. And honestly, like, a lot of people would say that it is an amazing feat how Sausage Party came out like this with a $20 million budget. But if it was done like that, then hell no, that's not really a good thing. But also, another element that really does take it a step way too far, not only that they were forced to work overtime, and not only that they had to be forced to work overtime and not get paid for it, is that most of the animators end up not getting credit. And that is honestly a personal insult, if anything. Like, that would be, like, for an animator, it's one of the ultimate payments to work on an animated feature, is that at least they would have their name in the credits. Like, one of the most, one of the worst examples that recently happened, actually, it was for the animated short Cosmic Scratastrophe that they put before the Peanuts movie. And I understand that technically it was made for Ice Age Collision Course, but it was actually very insulting over the fact that what they just did in terms of the animators. They say thank you to all the animators who worked on the Cosmic Scratastrophe, and pretty much that's it. No, they don't want, like, pretty much saying that is the equivalent of a politician saying, my thoughts and prayers are with those who have died. It means jack all. Like, they want to see their names associated with that movie so that they can actually put it in their resume and actually make it believable that they have actually contributed to that movie or animated short or whatever. The fact that over 30 animators got their name left out of Sausage Party, and like, so far that's pretty much just the small estimates between how much there are on IMDb in contrast to how many there are in the Sausage Party movie. That is actually really insulting for many animators, that even though that, yes, maybe they have quit, like many of them did quit early, like they quit before the movie was even complete, and yes, like, they pretty much experienced some of the worst times of their lives, but at least, like, at the very least, it would be nice that their names would be associated so that they can, so that for, like, if they want to get hired for another job, they would go and work on something that actually, you know, they'll work on a movie, and they'll have, and the people hiring them would have confidence bringing in someone who has previously worked on a feature film like Sausage Party. But no, they don't even get that, you know, they don't even get that credit. They don't even get that merit. Instead, it's like they pretty much got their names removed. And there's no way in frickin' hell that just 47 animators would work on this one, and like, one mainstream animated feature. It's impossible. Like, seriously. It's enough that, like, with the movie that that this film has a low budget, and, like, honestly, since it is a cheap, like, since the budget is cheap, the animation did come out looking cheap as well. Like, it's enough, but, like, for God's sakes, you can't just go out and exclude some animators just because they quit. That's not how it works. If they personally worked on the project, then they had to be, you know, they had to be put, they have to have their name in the credits. It's just like what, you know, like, take a look at Pixar's The Good Dinosaur. Now, even though that it is directed by Peter Son, the original concept and everything, it was thought up by Bob Peterson. Now, unfortunately, Pixar did fire him You know, they did fire him because he wouldn't make a good director for this film. They did still credit it. They still credit Bob Peterson that this was his original idea, that he did contribute to that film. I mean, just because those people quit doesn't mean that they deserve to have credit, to have their names be associated, you know? The only way that it would be acceptable, the way that it would be okay for that to actually happen, is that they would personally ask themselves to have their names no longer be associated with this movie, to have their name taken away from the credits. Like, that's the only time when it's acceptable. Like, okay, fine, whatever. But, you know, like, for an animated film, like, for animators who always have to seek out a job, like, they wanna at least have to have these credits. And who wouldn't, like, they would love to be associated with Sausage Party, even if they got, like, even if they had such a horrible time, at least they contributed to this R-rated animated feature that everybody seems to like, and it's actually doing well at the box office. So at least they want to say that they contributed to a hit animated feature. But no, they don't even get the credits for that. That is just, honestly, in that regards, that is just absolutely stupid. Now, with that said, some of you might be wondering, like, why is this happening? Like, overall, how could this even happen? How can companies like Nitrogen and people like Greg Tiernan can get away with being so abusive to their animators? How can they be such in the wrong with that? Like, how can they just go out and act like a total tyrant and, you know, like, they could get away with it scot-free? Like, nothing bad can happen to them. Well, I'll tell you why. And this is actually very interesting. And this is a point that's actually brought up by Deadline. And the big reason is actually because Sausage Party was made in Vancouver. And the thing is with Vancouver, the one thing that they do not have is an animation union. And the thing is with unions is that, one, like, I'm sure with many artists and animators, you understand, like, how it is to be in a union. Like, once you do join a union, like, you make sure, like, once you're in a union, you make sure that you're paid by this amount, you get treated this way, and you get these benefits as you are as an animator working on an animated project. That's the important thing about being in a union. There is no Canadian animation union. And I mean, some people notice that immediately. Like, let me read you a little bit here from Deadline. They definitely need a union, says Jennifer Monroe, VP of Unifor Locale 2000, which bills itself as the media union of British Columbia, though it doesn't have a contracting covering animators either. We've been monitoring animation companies to make sure they're not violating any employment standards, and we're reaching out to those workers to see if they need help. Right now, none of the animation studios in Vancouver are unionized. There are other aspects of the industry that are unionized, but animation isn't. And, you know, that's one of the sad things about it is that they're not union. So, like, the thing is to be expected to be paid and to be treated fairly and all that kind of stuff under the watchful eye of this big union, that doesn't exist apparently. So the thing is that it's kind of free. It's kind of free game once you enter into Vancouver, once you enter into Canada and stuff like that. And the thing is, there is another thing that I want to read something in here that does explain about, like, why they would bring in artists in Vancouver. But I don't know if they would say it in here. But I know that in terms of, like, working in Canada, like, most of the payments are actually covered by the government. And that is why companies like Sony would move their entire, like, visual effects and animation business onto Vancouver, because it's a lot more cheaper to make a movie in Vancouver than it is to work on a movie somewhere in, like, Los Angeles or somewhere in the U.S., because they don't have to worry too much about high costs, and they don't have to worry about unions to, like, spend all their money just to take care of their animators instead of actually making this movie actually happen. So that's one of the big things, is that Nitrogen, well, not just Nitrogen, but I mean, like, all the anime, like, pretty much all the animation studios that's, like, going on in Vancouver and in Canada in general, there needs to be this Canadian animation union. There needs to have one. Well, sorry, I think that was bad grammar there. There has to be one that needs to be made. But the saddest thing about it is that some of you might be wondering, like, why isn't there anybody that's going out there to stand up against, like, this kind of abuse, against this kind of small pay and stuff like that? Like, why isn't anybody standing up to actually make a union? If you want to know why, it's because people are scared. Now, if you may notice that whenever these account, like, whenever these things are happening, like, whenever these stories happen, is that a lot of animators are too scared to actually stand up and actually, you know, fight against the man in a way. They're too scared to fight up against, like, the abuse to artists and animators and the low pays that they would get, and, like, all the ways that the big studios are trying to cut corners in order to make animated films cheap so that they can get a lot more profit. You know, they don't, like, a lot of animators are too scared to do that. And the biggest reason is because, you know, it's for the sake of their job. They want to ensure that they want to have a future, at least, that they can work on another studio so that they can, you know, do their animations and stuff like that. The thing is that studios, they do not want to go and hire people. They don't want to hire people who snitches on them, who reveal, like, they want to reveal their dark secrets that the making of some of these animated features are terrible, because they don't want to advertise that many of these movies, like Sausage Party, has pretty much been slave labored in a way. So they don't want to go out and snitch to them by name that this person is responsible for telling the people that the animators at Sausage Party are treated very poorly, because nobody would then go hire them in a way. But honestly, it requires someone. There has to be at least someone to go and stand up, to go and create an animation union or something like that, to stand up and say that they do not want to take this anymore. Like, at least, like, what probably needs is an animator who has nothing to lose, in a sense. Like, an animator who is not afraid to lose everything that he has and try to go and stand up against them for the sake of the future of animators in Vancouver and the rest of Canada. That's what we need. You know, it's pretty much like this is something that reminds me exactly like in like with YouTube. Like, this is a personal example that I have. Like, we YouTubers have to always have to fight off against the copyright system, because we know that it's absolutely bullcrap. We know that the things that we're doing is fair use, but the copyright system is pretty much taking away all the profit we could have been making. We're pretty much losing thousands of dollars because of it, all because of these false claims that have been going on. And then suddenly, it took someone like Doug Walker, the Nostalgia Critic, to stand up and say that we've had enough with these bullcrap allegations and these bullcrap claims made by these computers for no reason, that we can no longer make a profit off of our videos. And so far, from what I'm seeing, changes are being made to the copyright system. There is some good coming out of Where's the Fair Use, from what I'm actually seeing. Like, I actually got a strike not too long ago, and it's actually less punishable than it was, like, a year ago. So we need someone to at least stand up to go and create a union for the sake of better, for better treatment to animators. Because trust me, like, enthusiastic animators, animators who love what they're doing, who love the process of it, and are treated fairly, and are especially treated with respect, they will enjoy what they're doing, and they will certainly give you an amazing product. And that's the thing. And that's the thing. Like, even with Sausage Party, it didn't come out... Like, the animation itself didn't come out all that great. The reason why people are loving it is mostly because of the script instead of the animation. It's just, like I said before, it just looks cheap because it is cheap. But, yeah, like, that's the whole thing, is that there has to be someone out there who needs to stand up against all this. Like, against all the abuse, against all the cheap labors and stuff like that. We need a union to make sure that the animators be treated fairly. It's not not necessarily to be paid like a certain big amount or anything, just to at least have the benefits, you know, to go out and have some, like, all the health benefits that they need, all the proper working conditions that they can have so that they can be comfortable and that they can be happy when working on these and, you know, on this animated works. And, you know, like, I would be, you know, honestly, maybe, like, you know, I wish I could do something. I wish I could stand up and actually go out there and make an animation union for all of Canada. But I know this is going to cost a lot of money, and I probably, like, I cannot, like, I know for a fact that I cannot do this alone. I probably need the help of many other animators and, like, many other big business heads to at least help me out to make a proper animation union for Canada. But for now, like, this is pretty much revealing a dark truth regarding what's pretty much going on, not just with Sausage Party, but basically with the animation industry in general, how it can be a scary place to work on animated projects. Sometimes you'll be in a place where you'll be happy to work there, and sometimes you'll end up making a piece of crap and feeling like a piece of crap doing it. And I know that there are a lot of people saying, like, there are so many people out there who are not going to support Sausage Party because of all this, when most of the animated films are made that way anyways. Like, that's not necessarily a good thing, okay? You know, that's pretty much the same excuse as when I hear on the internet, like, when you see, like, bad behavior going on. Actually, like, a great recent example is all the racist accusations going on because of Zendaya playing as Mary Jane in the upcoming Spider-Man Homecoming. And, like, when you try to tell someone off that, like, that's not a good thing to do, like, some people would say, like, oh, well, that's the internet, that's how things are. Okay, yeah, like, okay, yes, it's the internet, but that does not give you permission to be a freaking jerk, okay? That does not mean it's okay for you to be a complete douchebag on the internet and be absolutely racist or misogynist or whatever. That just makes you a douche all around, internet or not. And that's the thing, man. So with all that said, honestly, even though I've already posted my review of it, even though I personally enjoyed the movie itself, at this point, I can no longer support Sausage Party. Honestly, from then on, I am no longer going to go out and show my support of this film. I don't think I'm going to mention it in any of my other videos. I'm not going to do any, like, if the, in case of future purposes on film book, like, if the DVD comes out, I'm not gonna go and review it. Like, I'm not gonna do anything about it. Like, I've already done my review of the film, and that's pretty much it. I'm no longer gonna give my money to, or, like, I'm no longer gonna show my support or give my money to Sausage Party. And I'm not even gonna recommend people to go watch Sausage Party. I am pretty much taking out my support on the movie whatsoever until something is done. Until the animators are properly paid for this, until the animators get the credit that they deserve in the movie, or until something actually, like until something is actually revealed of what is going on, I can no longer show my support to Sausage Party. And instead, what I'm gonna do now is just, for those of you who are wondering, well, if I'm not gonna go, if I cannot watch Sausage Party anymore, then what else is there to watch in theaters? Well, let me tell you guys, just go watch Kubo. Instead of giving your money to Sausage Party, go watch Kubo and the Two Strings. And even though it's not a good excuse, like, even if you don't think it is a good excuse to go watch to go watch Kubo and the Two Strings because you don't want to show support for Sausage Party. I don't care. I just want you to go watch Kubo and the Two Strings. As I'm recording this, I have yet to reveal my entire thoughts in a review, but all I can say right now is just go watch Kubo, okay? Just go watch Kubo. I don't care what the excuse is. Just go watch Kubo. And I guess that's the big thing to take from this entire podcast, is to go watch Kubo. And that is all that I got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com to search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you have listened to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.